Think Twice. You're going to listen to Think Twice, a radio program originally broadcast a couple of years ago. The program is divided into different parts, and after each part, there are some questions. You can write while you're listening, but you'll be given time to answer the questions after each part. Your answers must be in English. At the end, you'll hear everything once again, without pauses. Now, let's listen to the first part. But first, read questions 1 to 4. Do that now, please. Okay, let's listen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Think Twice. And I'm Malcolm Merriam, your host, as usual. Now, have you ever thought of the fact that young people of today are the first generation to have been truly brought up in the technological age? Since birth, they have been surrounded by equipment like computers, TV games, freestyles, and, of course, mobile phones. A recent study about young people's habits shows that here in England, for example, 95% of 11 to 21-year-olds use a mobile phone, and as much as 88% have access to internet facilities. Well, almost everybody has a mobile, so what is this about mobiles? And the totally lost feeling you get without them? I've invited sociologist Jenny McNeil to talk about how mobiles affect our lives, allowing us to get in touch with one another anywhere, anytime. But is this always a blessing? Or are mobiles just another must-have in our consumer society? What can you tell us about our way of using them, Jenny?
Well, as usual, it's very difficult to generalise. The function of the mobile varies, of course. In some groups, it's important to have the latest model. Well, maybe it says something about who you are. Perhaps you want to make sure everybody can see it. You get it out, you leave it on the table beside you, etc. But really, I think that has changed. It was much more of a status symbol before. I heard a story from the 80s. My sister and some friends were in a cafe, and there they saw a man talking into his mobile for quite some time, having serious conversations, and they thought, he must be an important man. Then in the middle of his conversation, his phone actually rang. They realised that he only wanted to show off.
I see what you mean.
All right. Now answer questions 1 to 4, please. Ready? Now look at questions 5 to 8, please. Let's listen again.
Jenny, so how do young people use the different functions of the mobile? Are there any trends? When it comes to texting messages, for example.
Texting is very popular for nearly all social and communication activities, such as getting information, making appointments, sending thanks, and also relationship activities. When doing research about this, we saw that there are only a few differences between the sexes. But I can tell you that females, for example, have a greater preference for flirting by text than males have, and also for arranging the first date. Males, on the other hand, prefer more than females to end a relationship by text.
That's interesting. I must admit I hardly ever send text messages myself.
OK, but many people do. It's quite fascinating, actually, how changes in social practice sometimes surprise the designers of new technology. Everyone assumed that people would use mobiles primarily to talk, and no one anticipated the overwhelming move to texting.
Really? Now that is surprising.
You know, nowadays, teenagers can communicate with one another at all times. They can use texting to keep communication short, but of course they also talk to one another. Around 55% of the people we asked send text messages at least 5 times per day, whereas only 16% talk on their mobiles that many times a day.
OK, and of course we all know that mobiles have lots of advantages for young people and their parents. The kids can ring and say where they are, if they need picking up and so on. But what about the risks? Is there, for example, a danger of young people becoming too dependent on their mobile phones?
Sure. Many young people feel they can't turn their phones off when they go to sleep in case they miss some important message.
I remember a time when you simply didn't call a person's home after 10 p.m. unless it was an emergency.
Exactly. Now the teenager with a mobile, an internet connection and a TV in the bedroom can carry on communicating with the outside world into the early hours. This can have disastrous consequences for sleep and consequently for school performance the next day. You know, they are charged up, switched on and always connected.
Now answer questions 5 to 8, please. All right. Now look at questions 9 to 11. Do that now, please. Okay, let's listen again.
Okay, just one more thing, Jenny, before the break. What about an international perspective? Do we see the same trends in other countries?
Well, yes and no. Countries where teenagers have more or less the same buying power as they do in this country often see similar trends. But there are some interesting differences. For example, technical differences. One thing is that in places where ordinary telephone networks are limited, mobiles are the main means of telecommunication, such as in Cambodia or parts of Africa. On the other hand, the US has been slow in comparison to, say, Japan and Europe in making use of mobile services. And also, in the US, local calls on ordinary phones are very cheap, and many children already have telephones in their bedrooms, and not only their own telephone, but also their own number. So to some extent, they already have a vehicle for personal communication.
OK, that explains one or two things.
In Japan, on the other hand, whilst many young people have mobile phones, texting is not so common, since you can only send messages to friends that have the same phone company. Consequently, sending emails is more popular.
Interesting. Thanks a lot for coming in, Jenny. And listeners, we'll be back after the break.
Answer questions 9 to 11, please. All right. Let's go on to the next part of the program. Look at questions 12 to 14. Do that now, please. Okay, let's listen.
Now it's time for our regular slot about young people making a difference. Here we look at how they've decided to give something back to their community, to get involved in something they feel strongly about. Last week we met Teresa Jackson, a youth worker from Mississippi, and today we're going to listen to a report from another part of the world. Here's our travelling colleague, David Lemmer, who has just come back from East Africa, where he has visited a small island off Tanzania's coast.
Thank you, Malcolm, and hello, listeners. Today I want to tell you about a young man who I met when I was visiting the tiny island of Chumbe, a few kilometres west of the much bigger island of Zanzibar. Chumbe has a fantastic coral reef rising from the Indian Ocean, and it's an oasis in the otherwise overfished, overexploited waters of eastern Africa. Only 12 visitors a day are allowed on Chumbe because of its fragile ecosystem. It's covered by a so-called coral rag forest, and this is where I met Kamis Alipandu, whose summer job is to lead visitors on walks through the island's forest preserves, and this is the important part, give environmental information, that is, teach visitors about the surrounding reefs and the hundreds of fish species that the coral supports. What struck me about Kamis was his obvious commitment to the local area and its special environment. Kamis and his family moved from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam, to a small fishing village on Zanzibar when he was 10. At 14, he arranged to move to a relative in Stone Town in order to start a secondary school education, and available in his village. He's been studying for many years, but has no plans to stop. He says, "There's so much more I want to learn, and I know my voice can make a difference.
Now answer questions 12 to 14, please. Okay. Read questions 15 to 18, please. Now let's listen to the last part of the program.
Kamis explained to me that he thinks that his education has taught him the importance of considering the implications of your own actions. He said, "Of course, it's often hard for people to think of tomorrow, when each day may require you to walk kilometres for fresh water that won't make you sick." When I asked Kamis about the reason for him being so deeply concerned about environmental conservation, he said that there were two reasons. Firstly, in school, he loved geography. For example, how important it is to use the right methods when developing your country, methods that don't destroy water and land. And the second reason is that he wants to support his little village, Kizimkazi, whose economy depends on both fishing and tourism. The bay where the village is located is rich with dolphins, and the local fishermen take tourists out to watch them, even to swim with them. And the waters are good for fishing. They're filled with squid, tuna, bluefish, etc. But it's the coral reefs that make this abundance possible, and few are giving enough thought to their protection. Kamis puts it like this: if we continue to hurt the coral, we will eventually lose our livelihood. He has recently started an organisation to preserve the fragile coral reefs, while also supporting the fishermen and tour operators who depend on the reefs. His goal is to balance conservation and development. The idea is to educate both tour operators and tourists about the fragile ecosystem to ensure the well-being of the area for many years to come.
Now answer questions 15 to 18, please. Ready? Now you'll hear everything once again, without pauses. You can check your answers or write while you are listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Think Twice. And I'm Malcolm Merriam, your host as usual. Now, have you ever thought of the fact that young people of today are the first generation to have been truly brought up in the technological age? Since birth, they have been surrounded by equipment like computers, TV games, freestyles, and of course, mobile phones. A recent study about young people's habits shows that here in England, for example, 95% of 11 to 21-year-olds use a mobile phone, and as much as 88% have access to internet facilities. Well, almost everybody has a mobile, so what is this about mobiles? And the totally lost feeling you get without them? I've invited sociologist Jenny McNeil to talk about how mobiles affect our lives, allowing us to get in touch with one another anywhere, anytime. But is this always a blessing? Or are mobiles just another must-have in our consumer society? What can you tell us about our way of using them, Jenny?
Well, as usual, it's very difficult to generalise. The function of the mobile varies, of course. In some groups, it's important to have the latest model. Well, maybe it says something about who you are. Perhaps you want to make sure everybody can see it. You get it out, you leave it on the table beside you, etc. But really, I think that has changed. It was much more of a status symbol before. I heard a story from the 80s. My sister and some friends were in a cafe, and there they saw a man talking into his mobile for quite some time, having serious conversations, and they thought, he must be an important man. Then in the middle of his conversation, his phone actually rang. They realised that he only wanted to show off.
I see what you mean. Jenny, so how do young people use the different functions of the mobile? Are there any trends? When it comes to texting messages, for example.
Texting is very popular for nearly all social and communication activities, such as getting information, making appointments, sending thanks, and also relationship activities. When doing research about this, we saw that there are only a few differences between the sexes. But I can tell you that females, for example, have a greater preference for flirting by text than males have, and also for arranging the first date. Males, on the other hand, prefer more than females to end a relationship by text.
That's interesting. I must admit I hardly ever send text messages myself.
OK, but many people do. It's quite fascinating, actually, how changes in social practice sometimes surprise the designers of new technology. Everyone assumed that people would use mobiles primarily to talk, and no one anticipated the overwhelming move to texting.
Really? Now that is surprising.
You know, nowadays, teenagers can communicate with one another at all times. They can use texting to keep communication short, but of course they also talk to one another. Around 55% of the people we asked send text messages at least 5 times per day, whereas only 16% talk on their mobiles that many times a day.
OK, and of course we all know that mobiles have lots of advantages for young people and their parents. The kids can ring and say where they are, if they need picking up, and so on. But what about the risks? Is there, for example, a danger of young people becoming too dependent on their mobile phones?
Sure. Many young people feel they can't turn their phones off when they go to sleep in case they miss some important message.
I remember a time when you simply didn't call a person's home after 10 p.m. unless it was an emergency.
Exactly. Now the teenager with a mobile, an internet connection and a TV in the bedroom can carry on communicating with the outside world into the early hours. This can have disastrous consequences for sleep and consequently for school performance the next day. You know, they are charged up, switched on and always connected.
OK. Just one more thing, Jenny, before the break. What about an international perspective? Do we see the same trends in other countries?
Well, yes and no. Countries where teenagers have more or less the same buying power as they do in this country often see similar trends. But there are some interesting differences. For example, technical differences. One thing is that in places where ordinary telephone networks are limited, mobiles are the main means of telecommunication, such as in Cambodia or parts of Africa. On the other hand, the US has been slow in comparison to, say, Japan and Europe in making use of mobile services. And also, in the US, local calls on ordinary phones are very cheap, and many children already have telephones in their bedrooms, and not only their own telephone, but also their own number. So to some extent, they already have a vehicle for personal communication.
OK, that explains one or two things.
In Japan, on the other hand, whilst many young people have mobile phones, texting is not so common, since you can only send messages to friends that have the same phone company. Consequently, sending emails is more popular.
Interesting. Thanks a lot for coming in, Jenny. And listeners, we'll be back after the break. Now it's time for our regular slot about young people making a difference. Here we look at how they've decided to give something back to their community, to get involved in something they feel strongly about. Last week we met Teresa Jackson, a youth worker from Mississippi, and today we're going to listen to a report from another part of the world. Here's our travelling colleague, David Lemmer, who has just come back from East Africa, where he has visited a small island off Tanzania's coast.
Thank you, Malcolm, and hello, listeners. Today I want to tell you about a young man who I met when I was visiting the tiny island of Chumbe, a few kilometres west of the much bigger island of Zanzibar. Chumbe has a fantastic coral reef rising from the Indian Ocean, and it's an oasis in the otherwise overfished, overexploited waters of eastern Africa. Only 12 visitors a day are allowed on Chumbe because of its fragile ecosystem. It's covered by a so-called coral rag forest, and this is where I met Kamis Alipandu, whose summer job is to lead visitors on walks through the island's forest preserves, and this is the important part, give environmental information, that is, teach visitors about the surrounding reefs and the hundreds of fish species that the coral supports. What struck me about Kamis was his obvious commitment to the local area and its special environment. Kamis and his family moved from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam, to a small fishing village on Zanzibar when he was 10. At 14, he arranged to move to a relative in Stone Town in order to start a secondary school education, unavailable in his village. He's been studying for many years, but has no plans to stop. He says, "There's so much more I want to learn, and I know my voice can make a difference." Kamis explained to me that he thinks that his education has taught him the importance of considering the implications of your own actions. He said, "Of course, it's often hard for people to think of tomorrow, when each day may require you to walk kilometres for fresh water that won't make you sick." When I asked Kamis about the reason for him being so deeply concerned about environmental conservation, he said that there were two reasons. Firstly, in school, he loved geography. For example, how important it is to use the right methods when developing your country, methods that don't destroy water and land. And the second reason is that he wants to support his little village, Kizimkazi, whose economy depends on both fishing and tourism. The bay where the village is located is rich with dolphins, and the local fishermen take tourists out to watch them, even to swim with them. And the waters are good for fishing. They're filled with squid, tuna, bluefish, etc. But it's the coral reefs that make this abundance possible, and few are giving enough thought to their protection. Camus puts it like this: if we continue to hurt the coral, we will eventually lose our livelihood. He has recently started an organisation to preserve the fragile coral reefs, while also supporting the fishermen and tour operators who depend on the reefs. His goal is to balance conservation and development. The idea is to educate both tour operators and tourists about the fragile ecosystem to ensure the well-being of the area for many years to come.
And that was the end of the listening test. Go through your answers and check if there is something you would like to add or change. Remember, an English-speaking person must be able to understand what you've written.